This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Development and the Economy. We shall close with a reflection on this coming Sunday's gospel passage. I am John Baptist Tumusime. The Africa Regional Conference of the World Union of Catholic Women's Organizations concluded on Thursday in Uganda with a call to oppose domestic violence and to protect Mother Earth, our common home, from degradation. In her concluding speech, the president of the World Union of Catholic Women's Organizations, Monica Santamarina, condemned violence, particularly that which targets women and girls, and pointed out that beyond physical and sexual violence, economic violence has become increasingly prevalent, often resulting from poor management and inequitable control of salaries and financial resources. She appealed to church leaders to play an active role in combating all forms of violence against women, and also emphasized the need for education to raise awareness about gender equality. Among the concluding activities was a powerful testimony from a woman who survived sexual violence, who shared her painful experience and appealed to the church and governments to support and protect the victims. The 20th Plenary Assembly of the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar, SECAM, opened on Thursday in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. It was opened with speeches and solidarity messages. We have a report.
Over 250 bishops from across the African continent are attending the second plenary to plan for and reaffirm their pastoral mission as shepherds of the Church in Africa. The bishops are exploring a pastoral vision of the Church Family of God in Africa, not just for now, but for the Church of the next 25 years. Day one of the plenary assembly featured an opening mass celebrated by Cardinal Peter Turkson, and later in the plenary sessions, speeches emphasizing unity, collaboration in facing Africa's challenges were heard. Rwanda's Prime Minister, Dr. Justin Sengyumva, also addressed the SECAM bishops. He urged the bishops in Africa to consolidate their role in ethical leadership and in peace building. Calls for peace were also echoed by SECAM President Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo in his official opening address. Cardinal Ambongo said, ultimately, true peace can only come from Jesus Christ. Rwanda's Apostolic Nuncio, Archbishop Arnaldo Sanchez, and other speakers similarly spoke on the theme of peace and reconciliation in Africa. Cardinal Michael Cheney, the prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, offered suggestions to the bishops on how the Church in Africa can best collaborate with his dicastery. Bishops from various continental episcopal conferences attending the second plenary expressed solidarity with Africa. The conference has now entered day two and is expected to conclude this coming Sunday. From Kigali, Rwanda, for Vatican News, I'm Father Paul Samasumo.
The Catholic bishops of South Sudan have invited all the citizens of that country, irrespective of their religious affiliations, to join hands in efforts aimed at restoring peace. The bishops have also expressed appreciation to all citizens and nationals of other countries who are engaged in efforts to bring peace to the country. The bishops made the invitation and their appreciation in the statement they issued a few days ago after their plenary assembly, which was held in the capital, Juba.
The statement was delivered to the media by the Archbishop of Juba, Cardinal Stephen Ameyu.
We wholeheartedly acknowledge and commend all those who are committed to and advancing peace in our nation. Your silent effort and acts of kindness are not unnoticed. They are always blessed by God. As the scripture reminds us, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Please continue with your whole noble works. South Sudan is moving forward because of you.
Cardinal Stephen Ameyu, the Archbishop of Juba in South Sudan, speaking there to the media in Juba a few days ago. Catholic bishops in Ivory Coast have called for a renewed commitment to the country's democratic principles to ensure transparency and fairness as the country prepares for a presidential election scheduled for October this year. The call comes after President Alassane Ouattara, 83 years old, announced a few days ago that he would seek a fourth term of office in the upcoming election. The president had previously stated that he would not seek another term, but he reversed his position after the death of his designated successor. The opposition have warned that it would be unconstitutional for him to stand. The bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Bofusan in Cameroon, the Right Reverend Paul Keune, has condemned the spread of hate speech, tribalism, misinformation, and lies in the country, warning that they undermine peace and national cohesion. Cameroon is preparing for general elections scheduled for October this year. Politicians are in the process of canvassing for votes, and some have resorted to telling lies and encouraging their supporters to unleash violence to members of other parties. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
A new UN report has said a threat posed by the Islamic State group and Al-Qaeda extremists is escalating in Africa and Syria. In a report released this week, UN experts said Africa remains the epicenter of terror activity, with groups like Al-Qaeda-linked JNIM in West Africa and Al-Shabaab in East steadily expanding territory. In the Sahel, JNIM, which stands for Jamaat Nusrat al-Islam wal-Muslimin, is reportedly capable of complex attacks, including drones and IEDs, while Al-Shabaab maintains strongholds in Somalia and deepens ties with Yemeni Houthi rebels, the report said. The UN experts also said Syria is emerging as a key strategic base for both ISIS and Al-Qaeda's external operations following the ouster of President Bashar al-Assad. Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo held the first meeting of a joint oversight committee on Thursday under a peace deal signed in Washington in June. The African Union, Qatar, and the United States joined the meeting of the committee in Washington, which was established as a forum to deal with implementation and dispute resolution of the peace agreement. Reuters reports that the meeting is a step toward implementing the peace deal, even as other commitments are yet to be fulfilled. The deal in June between the two neighbors marked a breakthrough in talks held by U.S. President Donald Trump's administration, which aims to bring an end to the fighting that has killed thousands and displaced millions. In the agreement, Rwanda and the DRC pledged to implement a 2024 deal that will see Rwandan troops withdraw from eastern Congo within 90 days. It also said the two countries will form a joint security coordination mechanism within 30 days, and implement a plan agreed last year to monitor and verify the withdrawal of Rwandan soldiers within 3 months. Congolese military operations targeting the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, or the FDLR, are meant to conclude over the same time frame. A South African university has launched an anti-poaching campaign in which the horns of rhinos will be injected with a radioactive material. The group of scientists from the University of Witwatersrand said the process is harmless to rhinos but will allow custom officers to detect smuggled horns as they are transported across the world. The RISOTOP project was launched on Thursday after 6 years of research and testing. The researchers, who collaborated with the International Atomic Energy Agency, found horns could even be detected inside 40-foot shipping containers. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Development and the Economy. Welcome to the program. In this edition today, Human Trafficking and the Sustainable Development Goals. My name is Kanyenta Godfrey Kampamba. Human trafficking is a global issue that is deeply intertwined with development challenges. This fact makes human trafficking an international threat that almost always is driven by organized crime that every year sees more and more women, children and men being exploited, including for forced labor and sex. And as can be seen, human trafficking actually thrives on vulnerabilities that are created by poverty, inequality, lack of education, and limited access to resources. In this way, human trafficking impacts various aspects of human development that, in the long run, hinders progress towards sustainable development goals. Experts say that development initiatives can play a crucial role by addressing its root causes and empowering vulnerable populations. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime works to provide humanitarian, legal and economic assistance to survivors of human trafficking. Mira Sovigno is an Oscar-winning actress and United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime Goodwill Ambassador for the Global Fight Against Human Trafficking. As the world observed this year's World Day Against Trafficking in Persons on 30th July, Emma Traeger-Lewis sat down with Sovigno and asked her to talk about humanity's collective interest and responsibility to ensure that the most vulnerable people and populations are not left behind by economic, social, and environmental progress.
When we were taught in school about slavery, we thought it essentially ended with the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation. And now to know that there's this underground illegal form of slavery that is a giant booming business, which is always like in second place for the world's largest criminal enterprise, just after illegal drugs, but it ties with the illegal arms, and that there's 50 million people living in slavery today by some accounts, and only less than 1% of them exit. So 99% of them are continuing in this kind of terrible bondage. I met with trafficking survivors after having made the miniseries called Human Trafficking in 2004, and they changed my life, seeing the pain in their eyes and understanding how they had been victimized and brutalized to such an extent that didn't recognize their humanity in one single bit, that they had no worth, that they were treated like things and expendable. And I could not turn my back, and I became more deeply invested in the cause. And then the UN took notice of some of the things I was doing and invited me to work on it with them. So it's really for the survivors that I do this, and the victims out there who are waiting to become survivors. I feel like in the time that I've been doing this with the UN, awareness has grown in the world and more laws have been written, but the actual results sort of remain similar. I mean, compared to the overall number of people trafficked, the number of convictions, the number of discovered victims are very light. And so I am these days really trying to sound the alarm that, okay, we have some general awareness now. What are we going to do that makes a real difference, that makes a real dent? Because right now the traffickers are winning this war, and we need to step up with actions, preventative, you know, holistic wraparound approaches that try and solve root causes, that try and reduce demand, that try and prevent harm to the victims while creating real penalties for those who keep trafficking alive, and providing substantive restorative care to those who have exited.
As part of your work with UNODC, you support the UN Volunteer Trust Fund for Victims of Trafficking. In a few words, can you please explain what that trust fund is?
It's an incredible fund. It is the dedicated fund that UNODC manages for victims of trafficking in persons across the globe. We serve victims in over 60 countries. We have helped over 100,000 victims. And these are all for NGOs, aid groups that work directly on the ground to restore the lives of trafficked people. It's not for advocacy. It's not for publicity. It's literally life saving and changing services. And we just came back from an incredible mission trip to Mexico, Mexico City and Puebla, to visit two of the organizations that the fund has contributed to in the past. And we saw the amazing work they're doing with children and young women who have been trafficked sexually. My heart was broken seeing these 12-year-old girls with their own toddlers that were the product of their traffickers, who kind of anchored them to them by creating a child with them that then they had custody of. And so they can't even leave the shelter because these men will snatch these children away from them. And seeing these young, young girls in such vulnerability and having suffered so much so early in their life, it just broke my heart. I've met many, many, many survivors and interviewed many survivors over the years, but it always breaks my heart anew every time.
Can you please give us a few examples of how the Trust Fund has had a direct impact on survivors?
Okay, well, in these two organizations, one of them helped them hire a social anthropologist who would research it when they were trying to place these girls, when they would get out of the shelter, and they had to find them a safe landing once they left. They would research the towns that they would be going to, whether they were going back to their families or some other place, and they would work to see if the communities or the people that they were going to join were safe and were educated and would understand how to protect and help these survivors thrive in their new lives. And it was a vital service because often people are re-trafficked. They are reabsorbed for lack of opportunities in the outside world, lack of resources, but also just vulnerability because the traffickers are looking for them. And often they were actually trafficked by their own family. In one of the interviews that we did in Mexico City, they said that 70% of the victims of sex trafficking that they had studied were trafficked by their own mothers. 70%. In the U.S., the figures I've heard are about 53% are family controlled. The other organization, El Poza de Vida, that organization used our fund to create a special program for special needs and victims who are on the spectrum and developmentally delayed trafficking victims who were children, who their abuse had created a huge gap between their biological age and their mental age. And some of these victims were trafficked as babies. So they did not have a normal upbringing. Some of them had missed the phases of crawling and fine motor skills and ever going to school, learning to read and write, learning to draw, all the things that normal children do, which help them develop their bodies, their fine motor skills, their gross motor skills, and their brains. Those things were skipped because they were enslaved for the most horrific of purposes. And they obviously have so much trauma. And this place was so joyful. I can't even tell you. Like, these kids were really happy, and they had a survivor leader who created the program. And I think that that made a huge difference because they knew she was one of them, and she had been through what they had been through. And she was very successful at creating these programs where those age gaps, you know, flattened out, and they were able to be prepared to live a normal life where they could fulfill their own dreams and their own destinies and pursue educations and careers just like everybody else. So those are the two in Mexico that we studied. Another one that I worked with in California, Coalition to Abolish Slavery and Trafficking, they used our fund to hire a lawyer because the number one reason that victims would come to them in the first place, survivors, was seeking legal aid for whether it was to pursue justice against the trafficker, to deal with immigration issues, et cetera, et cetera. And so they were able to hire this lawyer and were able to, you know, serve 130 more victims during that period because of the fund. And then they built this very robust legal wing. And that man is there to this day that was hired with our fund and doing incredible work.
You talked about programs being led by survivors. Why is it important that the UN partners with local NGOs and with survivors to lead these programs?
I think it's so important to have survivor voices and survivor leadership. Our fund is led by a survivor. Victoria, the head of our board of trustees, is a survivor, and she's just incredible. I mean, so inspirational. And when she spoke to the girls at the shelter in Puebla, their faces were glowing. They were so happy because they saw there was a path forward for them where they could thrive and be important and accomplished and successful and articulate like she was, powerful.
That was Maria Sovigno, the Oscar-winning actress and United Nations Goodwill Ambassador for the Global Fight Against Human Trafficking. She was talking there to Emma Trigger-Lewis from the United Nations News about humanity's collective interest and responsibility to ensure that the most vulnerable people and populations, including migrants and refugees, are not left behind by economic, social, and environmental progress. And that is all we have time for in today's edition of Development and the Economy. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyan Tagodfrey Kampamba.
Coming up next, a reflection on this Sunday's readings, prepared and presented by Father Enobong Udaidiong.
Our wealth was meant to be used for the common good. It is a gift from God for the betterment of the human society. It is true that wealth and inheritance were meant to make life meaningful, but in the wrong hands, they can bring disharmony to the community. This Sunday, in the Gospel reading, we are presented with the story of two brothers struggling over inheritance, and one of them came to Jesus asking him to help settle their dispute. Many tribunals in the world have been encompassed with cases of inheritance, resource control, settlements, and the problems of riches. In a bid to acquire more and more riches and inheritance, family ties have been destroyed. Friendship and peaceful coexistence have been sacrificed on the altar of avarice and greed. In all these struggles to acquire more riches, many do not take time to reflect on the importance of using these riches for the betterment of the human society. Riches can be sources of blessing and can also be sources of hatred, division, and wars when they are not properly used for the good of all. To the man who asked him to intervene in the inheritance dispute, Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of all greed and materialism, for man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Jesus' response opens the door to his teaching on wealth and greed. It is very true that material wealth does not give satisfaction. The more a person has, the greater his wants. The parable of the rich man whose land yielded a rich harvest shows this. There is no problem in desiring more when it is for a just cause. But the problem is when riches take the place of God in our lives and when our inordinate desire for wealth destroys others, destroys family ties, friendship, and everything we hold sacred, such as the dignity of the human life. When riches are acquired in legitimate and dignified ways, they are sources of blessings for all. They are not meant to replace God. There are some people who in their riches say God does not exist. The psalmist in Psalm 49 verse 20 says, "Such people lack wisdom, and they are like the beasts that are destroyed." St. Paul, in his letter to the Colossians chapter 3, invites us to work for the things of heaven, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Earthly riches are useful resources to gain heavenly riches. The good we do with the earthly riches we have do not only make us leave good legacies in our communities, but they also gain for us riches in heaven, where Christ is. the desire to gain heavenly riches makes us use well the earthly riches we have acquired. When we appreciate the riches we have as gifts from God and then use them for His glory, we have no reason to be afraid. There are many rich people that are busy storing treasures for themselves in heaven by using their wealth meaningfully. These are those who are aware of the vanity of earthly things. These are people who know one day they will be no more and they will have to leave their wealth to others. Therefore, they take the words of Jesus to heart by using their wealth wisely. They invest in life-changing projects in their communities. They use their wealth to uplift the less privileged and the poor. They use their wealth for service to humanity, often not seeking the praise of people. They are those who are not greedy with what they have. And so we are invited not to act like the rich fool who, out of greed and inordinate desire for wealth, failed to acknowledge God as the giver of life and every wealth. Let us be more interested in using our wealth for the glory of God and for the good of the human society, and by so doing merit riches in heaven where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. May the message of Christ in all its richness continue to find a home in our hearts through the same Christ, our Lord. Peace be with you.
That was a reflection by Father Enobong Udaidion from Nigeria. You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumosime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, The World Around Us. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.